Ms. Berkovich, please proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Michelle Berkovich, and I represent the appellant, the petitioner, Ms. Doreen Cross. With me is co-counsel James Eisenman. With the court's permission, I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, this case, timely before this court, seeks simply to ensure that OPM gives effect to Wayne Cross's clear intent that his former spouse, Ms. Cross, to whom he was married to for over 30 years, continued to receive the survivor annuity he first elected for her upon his retirement in 2005 and intended for her to continue to receive following his divorce. This is actually a very narrow issue on appeal. It's as to whether OPM gave Mr. Cross effective notice after his March 2015 divorce.
Counsel, do we review that determination in this case, the question of whether there was effective notice?
Absolutely.
A legal question or for fact? Is it a substantial evidence question or a legal question in this case?
Absolutely, Your Honors. In this case, it is a substantial evidence issue. It is also, I believe there's also in accordance with the law because there is also a question here, and I believe the board did not apply the correct burdens of proof in this case. Because OPM had an obligation to provide notice, and it failed.
It's annual notice, right?
Correct, annual notice, and the key thing is consistent with the court's decision. That annual notice really is important when it comes after the divorce. That is when this right to election triggers. Because when divorce generally terminates prior elections of survivor benefits, an annuitant then has a 2-year window to reinstate or continue a survivor benefit for now former spouse.
What is the evidence that the board relied on to show that annual notice was received in this case? What is all the evidence?
All the evidence, Your Honors, is a 2012 document that Ms. Cross found in a burn pile after Mr. Cross's death. And that, I think, is really the key point here. That notice cannot be the type of evidence that is sufficient to carry OPM's burden. It is very clear under this court's precedence that it is OPM who must prove that Mr. Cross received effective notice and received that notice after the divorce, i.e. the triggering event for that right of election. Consistent with Downing, Briggs, Harrison, and Simpson, there's very clear ways in which OPM can carry its burden, and this is a two-part burden.
Is it a burden of proof or a burden of production? It might be because you can see how they're in the best position to show, in fact, that here's evidence showing that we provided annual notice, so a burden of production, even if it's not the burden of proof.
Right, and absolutely. Dating back to Brush in 1992, this court has held, Your Honor, that two-part burden from OPM, it is a burden of production. They are in the best position to produce that, but it's also an essential element of OPM's case because once Ms. Cross makes an allegation that Mr. Cross did not receive that notice, OPM has to prove, one, that it sent the notice, and two, the contents of that notice. So that's an evidentiary question, but it's also a very important legal burden for OPM to meet because of the importance of that notice obligation.
Why isn't it enough? I mean, the board here said that 2012 notice was enough to show that annual notice had been provided. Why, in your view, is that not substantial evidence?
So it's not substantial evidence because, first, to answer that question, I'd like to take a step back and start with what this court has found to constitute sufficient evidence. What is that? What are we supposed to see? We're supposed to see, generally speaking, it has to be more than a mere letter. It has to be, OPM generally provides an affidavit of the person familiar with the annual notices saying how they're sent out and the master role, a copy of the notice sent in the relevant year, and some sort of evidence in the file from which we can judge a notice was actually sent. Here, OPM and the judge point to the 2012 document as being sufficient to meet that burden. And there's four reasons why that notice is not sufficient. So the first is relevance. Under Harrison, this court has held that the relevant notice is the first notice received after the divorce. The contents of a pre-divorce notice are not sufficient or relevant. The notice is important only after that right to election triggers. The 2012 document.
What if in this, I'm gonna test what you just said. So what if the notice was received in January and the divorce occurred in March? Why wouldn't that be sufficient notice? That's not the facts in this case, but I'm just testing your hypothesis that it's the notice that comes after the divorce that's so important. What if it was a notice that was just a couple months before the divorce?
I think that does raise a good question, but this court has been very clear in all of its prior cases, again, looking to Simpson, Briggs, the court has never looked to a pre-divorce notice to determine the sufficiency. And I think that makes sense, given there's cases where OPM's given conflicting information either before or after a divorce. The right to an election is not triggered until that divorce is finalized. In this situation, perhaps there would be a question if a notice had been received in 2015 around the time of the divorce. But unfortunately, that's not the case here, and there's no evidence at all from OPM to indicate that anything was sent at any time in 2015. And I say that in this case because the divorce proceedings started in late 2014, but they were not at all finalized until 2015. In Downing, the court looked to a form that was filled out during a divorce proceeding that contained some notice.
So, counsel, in the appendix, we have a copy of his 2005 election. That is the election in which he chooses to accept a reduced annuity in exchange for the spousal survivor benefits. That's at page 62 of the appendix. That's in 2005. Is that the only election Mr. Cross ever made? Or upon receiving annual notice, is he required to reaffirm, re-elect? What happens? The government has asserted that he received notice annually. The only proof of any such thing is some 2012 document, which we don't even seem to have in the record, so I have no idea what it even looks like. But the question is, right now to you, is this the only thing he ever filled out indicating his intent to ensure annuity benefits for his then-wife, Miss Cross, or actually, yeah, they were separated at that point, but still a wife, or does the annual notice come with a requirement that he respond?
No, Your Honor, that annual notice does not come with a requirement. To answer your question, this form in Appendix 62, that's the SF-3107, is the only place where Mr. Cross has made an election. The form states that election is irrevocable and no change is going to be permitted after his annuity is granted. There's four choices, one of which is a reduced annuity with maximum survivor annuity for my spouse. And Mr. Cross initialed and signed that box right there. That box does not contain any information about what might trigger that election to dissipate, to become no longer valid. And indeed, per the testimony offered at hearing from Mrs. Cross and their daughter, Mr. Cross believed that that was an irrevocable one-time election. He had not been required any time.
I mean, is it by law irrevocable? Why would he be given notice annually if this is irrevocable?
The reason why there's annual notice is to remind employees because there are essentially these changed circumstances that will trigger a new election, primarily death of the person for whom you've elected a survivor annuity, divorce, or remarriage. There's a two-year window for re-election of an election or re-election of a survivor annuity upon divorce or remarriage. That annual notice serves, you will presumably get two of those annual notices within that window to remind you once that election right is triggered. But until that, there's an election right that's triggered, there's the annual notice that you're going to be getting is not really relevant. You've made an irrevocable election.
Okay, tie your hands to the podium. Okay, but apart from that, what happens? So I guess the problem I have with the rule that you're proposing or the standard for applicability is that you would like for us to determine that no notice was given here, even assuming he received notice in December of 2014. Suppose he received notice every December. You would like a rule of law that requires notice to be given by OPM after the qualifying life event in order for it to be effective. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor, yes.
How is OPM supposed to know about the qualifying life event? Did he have an obligation or did he report to them his divorce? Because how would OPM ever know that somebody died who was the beneficiary named or the spouse named or that they are now divorced? How would OPM know in order to provide that notice?
So, Your Honor, that's an excellent question. As part of the annual notice that OPM is supposed to send out every year, there's a bolded box that says you should contact OPM at this number in the event of death, divorce of the spouse. And that number is also in the booklet that you get at the time of retirement. Generally speaking, when an employee dies, sometimes it takes a few months to notify OPM. But the reason why that annual notice is important, it's for two parts. Both you have the instructions on how to contact OPM, and you also have you're reminded that you now have a triggering
but
event.
But that's the annual notice. I understand your arguments to be twofold. The first is that there is no adequate notice because even if notice had been presented in December of 2014, that would be insufficient because notice has to be given after the divorce in order for him to have an opportunity to make the proper election. I'm having trouble with that argument. Your secondary argument, I understand, is that in this case, there isn't even any evidence that notice was provided on December in 2014 or 2013. The only evidence of notice was actually the evidence Cross introduced, which goes all the way back to 2012. And I also understand you to have argued or for there to be an argument or an understanding that in cases like this, normally OPM introduces declarations or other evidence that would substantiate notice, and none of that is present here. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
So that's a very narrow argument, but I want to I understand that argument completely. I want to understand the basis for the broader argument you make, and in particular, how could we conclude that a post-divorce notice is necessary when OPM is not necessarily aware of any divorces or deaths or anything else?
Well, to answer your question, generally speaking, that requirement is met through this automatic, through this dual timeline. One, you have the annual notices. Two, you have a two-year window. Here, through an accident of death, the two-year window passed prior to the notice and the expiration. But this annual notice is really a statutory requirement. And the issue is for the employee to note that right of election does not trigger until the qualifying event. And that's the only time when that notice becomes important. So if an employee doesn't receive notice at the time that right to election arises, I do think that becomes kind of a very serious question here because the
employee... But how would OPM know to send a notice?
Well, I think...
How are they supposed to know he got divorced? How are they supposed to know that maybe the beneficiary elected on the form has died? And why would we create a rule of law that puts that onus on them? It would be one thing if in this instance, if there was some evidence to suggest he contacted OPM to inform them of a qualifying event and asked them, you know, how that affects his circumstances. But that's not the case.
I think the case here is Mr. Cross believed he had made an irrevocable election. He had completed all of his requirements economically by paying into that survivor annuity and continuing to receive a reduced annuity following his death.
Counsel, can I just ask you, your argument, your case doesn't rise and fall with this legal argument, right? I mean, you're relying on Harrison, I think, which has some language about it's the first notice received after the divorce that matters in that context of that case. And you're making a legal rule out of that, right? But you have an alternative argument, don't you? I mean, which is what Judge Moore referred to, which is is there substantial evidence to support that annual notice even occurred here?
Correct. And I think in this case, we don't even need to necessarily reach that divorce rule because OPM, because there's not substantial evidence that 2012 notice is received 3 years before a divorce, It is in small print. I've seen the documents. In small print on the back of a COLA notice. On the other side, it says something about tax notices are starting to be sent electronically. Without evidence from OPM as to confirming what notice was sent out, the contents of that notice, and whether that 2012 document was the notice, we're not even sure, we don't even have the necessary assurances to analyze that 2012 document and determine whether it was notices at all. That's why the burden of proof is so important. OPM is in the position to prove that. We only have Mrs. Cross's third-hand search of a burn pile. We can't talk to Mr. Cross. He is sadly passed.
Okay, counsel, do you want to save some time for rebuttal?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay, very good. Let's hear from the government.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Although Mrs. Cross is an unfortunate victim of bad timing, there is no legal basis here on which to grant her survivor annuity benefits.
Now, is it Christie or Christie?
Christie.
Christie. Okay, thank you. I have a question. There's evidence in the Du Bois case, which is in our federal appendix, but it's a federal appendix case, non-precedential. But there was evidence from Mr. Benson to the effect that in December of each year, the notice is sent out. And I think in this case, at Appendix 4, the AJ found that the notice that was found, the 2012 notice, was in December. Should we take it as a given that it's, for purposes of this case, that it's the practice of OPM to send these notices out each December?
Yes, that is correct, Your Honor.
Even though it's not enshrined in a rule or regulation, we can understand for purpose of this case that December is when the notices go out.
That is correct.
Okay.
And where's the evidence of that? In this case?
OPM, as Your Honor stated, OPM did not provide an affidavit in this case explaining that it provides annual notice in December. However, that is OPM's general practice.
Where's the evidence? We decide cases based on evidence, not attorneys telling me what agencies generally do.
And that is in that 2012 notice that was provided to Mr. Cross that Mrs. Cross turned over.
What exactly is that 2012 notice other than the fact that in December of 2012, notice was provided?
There's an excerpt from the notice on appendix page 5. And that particular section of the notice is the relevant language here. And that language is italicized in the middle of that paragraph. And essentially it states, please note, a new election is required within 2 years after divorce.
So I don't really have a problem with the language here. I do think it provides notice. My concern is I don't see how one notice dated December 2012 proves that notice was provided annually. Maybe if there were 5 years, maybe if there was 8 years of notice in the record. But here we have 1 year, no affidavit or anything else.
According to Brush vs. OPM, OPM has the burden of showing that it is more probable than not that annual notice was sent. And the administrative judge at the MSPB determined that this notice from 2012, because it was found in one of Mr. Cross's burn piles, it was highly likely that he had simply burned the notices from previous years.
But a fact finding has to be based on evidence. There's no evidence of any of that.
I believe that MSPB based on the evidence that because Mrs. Cross provided that notice, and really this brings me to a point.
Because she provided a notice from 2012, with nothing else attached, and the fact that it was in a burn pile, that is evidence that supports a fact finding that he received notices in 2013 and 2014 and actually burned them. That is substantial evidence.
That is what MSPB found, and
but
really the
issue. I understand that's what they found. I just want to hear you tell me it's substantial evidence, because it's hard for me to imagine you could stand there with a straight face and say it. So go ahead. Is that substantial evidence for a fact finding that he received notice in 2013 and 2014 and that he burned them?
Yes, we do believe that is.
You didn't look at me when you said it, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yes, we do believe that is substantial evidence.
Wow.
Excuse
me, Ms. Kristen. I think, and it's not your fault, I think the difficulty you have here is, and it's been highlighted by the colloquy you've had with the chief and Judge Stoll, I think the difficulty here is that the December 2012 notice that was found is not accompanied by the sort of evidence that we had in the Du Bois case and the Briggs case, where OPM presented testimony from a representative, this gentleman, I don't know if he's still there, this Mr. Benson, who said that the notices were sent out in December. I think in that situation, you probably would have the substantial evidence. But I think the difficulty you have, and it's not your fault, obviously, is that you don't have that here. And without that, aren't you asking us respectfully to kind of go a bridge too far without the Benson-type testimony?
No, Your Honor, because in other cases where OPM did provide an affidavit and the court determined that there was no notice, there was evidence from appellant that none had been received. So, for example, in, I believe it was Simpson, Mr. Simpson kept meticulous records and receipts of important documents that he received. OPM provided an affidavit, but within Mr. Simpson's records, absolutely no notices were found. And so this issue of annual notice really only comes up where appellant makes a claim that the annuitant never received notice or that notice was legally deficient. And here, Mrs. Cross has not argued that Mr. Cross did not receive the notice. The only statements Mrs. Cross has made is that the notice was not clear and it may have been confusing to Mr. Cross. She has made no allegation that the sentence is confusing or that the notice does not provide the pertinent information. And according to Simpson and Briggs, this notice does, in fact, provide that required information.
Ms. Christie, let me ask you one other question that is sort of tiddling around in my mind here. We know that the notices go out annually, right? And they have to. So for the moment, you have this hypothetical. A and B are married. A is the husband, B is the spouse. A divorce decree is entered on March the 1st. And then, with no election by A for survivor benefits for B. And then on March 2, A dies, the day after the divorce decree. There's no election. What happens in that case?
In that case, the surviving spouse would still not be, would not receive those benefits because there is simply no provision in the law to provide those benefits. If under the statute.
But what if no notice had been provided that year?
Then that would be a different situation. If no notice had been provided in the previous December, then I believe in Hairston, the court did look at that situation where notice prior to the divorce was unclear. And really, OPM, going to a different... Well,
so what you're saying is, in other words, even though the notice was in a prior calendar year, it would suffice in that situation.
Yes, because there is no requirement that OPM understand, well, know when life events have happened and provide notice.
But I thought there was a legal requirement that OPM provide annual notice.
In fact, that legal requirement is in 5 U.S.C.
It's a note.
A339 note, yes. And it really only applies to civil service retirement retirees. And Mr. Cross here was under the federal employee retirement benefit. That's what he retired under. And there is no statutory requirement in the FERS to provide such annual notice. In Becker versus OPM, this is a case from 2017.
Did you argue in your brief that there is no statutory requirement to provide annual notice?
No, we did not.
Yeah, there's an OPM reg that requires notice.
Yes. Yes, there is no statutory.
You did not argue any presumption of regularity also below before the board. Instead, the board made a fact finding, right?
Yes, the board did make a fact finding and cited two Schumachers versus OPM. And stated that, well, in Schumacher's, the court stated that the burden shifts to appellant to show evidence of non-receipt. And here, Mrs. Cross provided evidence of receipt with that 2012 notice. I apologize. Now, Mrs. Cross also argued that Mr. Cross did not receive this notice before he died, but there is no requirement that OPM provide this notice immediately following life events, and OPM cannot predict when somebody will die. This is why this notice goes out annually in December.
I guess the situation here is they go out every December. You have a 2-year time frame within which to make your election following the divorce decree, correct?
Yes, that is
so
correct.
So presumably, even if, you know, the divorce was in the next year, there would be in the normal course of events, assuming the annuitant continued to live, that you'd have enough time. There'd be a notice during the 2-year period.
That is correct. Yes, Your Honor. And according to Harrison, the question is not whether the employee received a notice immediately following. The question is, did the notices surrounding the election period provide those requirements for election? Was it clear? And there was a case, Beckstead versus OPM, where the court stated that it is evident that since these cases, referring to Simpson, Wood, and Hairston, OPM has addressed...
What was that case?
Beckstead versus OPM, and it's...
Yeah, what's the site for it?
It's 842 Fed APPX 578, and it's...
842 what?
Federal Appellate...
Federal Appendix?
Yes.
Okay, 842 Federal Appendix?
578.
Okay.
And this is from 2001.
In the Brush case, I understand the court to be making it OPM's burden to show it complied with the notice requirements. Is that fair?
Yes.
So how did OPM satisfy its burden to establish that it complied with the annual notice requirement in this case?
Yes. Again, OPM did not provide an affidavit. However, the notice from 2012 and the fact that...
Is there something in the notice from 2012? We only have the snippet, right? So I'm assuming hopefully you've seen the full version of it. Is there something in it that indicates, for example, this notice is provided annually, for example, something like that?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen the full notice. Mm-hmm. I cannot answer that question. But because there was that 2012 notice and the presumption that Mr. Cross had burned the other notices.
Wait, what presumption? a presumption he burned the other notices? Where does that presumption come from?
That was what the MSPB stated. It
was there any evidence that he burned it? I mean, did anyone testify to that? Did anyone say that? Other than the fact that it was in something marked burn. And it was 2012, not 2013 or 2014. It was older than that.
I don't believe Mrs. Cross stated specifically that the other notices were burned, but she did state that she found this notice in a burn pile and that Mr. Cross's practice was to burn documents.
I don't think there's any testimony where she said that the other notices were burned. Are you aware of any? I have not seen any.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
That's correct. Just quickly going to the point of the required notice, yes, OPM must show that it sent accurate annual notices in the relevant two-year election period, but two cases, Bellinger and Darsigny, don't go specifically to this question of whether the employee passes away before receiving notice. However, in Bellinger, the court held that OPM could not have violated its notice provision due to Mr. Bellinger's death. In Darsigny, the court stated that there is no intent in the legislative history to provide that a survivor makes must be. The court determined the election was only for those alive to exercise it.
Ms. Christie, let me answer.
Go ahead.
Oh, I just want to ask you one because your time is just about up. In a situation where it's determined that a notice was not received, there still must be evidence in the record and a finding to the effect that it was the desire or the intent or the wish of the deceased annuitant to provide a pension or a benefit for his former spouse. I assume that in this case there's no dispute on that point because the AJ found I think in his decision that I think there was something to the effect. It's clear from the record that Mr. Cross intended for Mrs. Cross to receive the benefit. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so that's not an issue. We can accept that.
That's correct.
Okay.
What, if anything, should we read in? I'm very sympathetic, as you no doubt gathered, to the idea that it would be quite difficult for us to impose on OPM a burden to become aware of when people divorce or become aware of when survivor beneficiaries die in order to therefore present that individual with notice. So obviously, I think that to me would be a sort of troubling situation to create. But what would have happened, and I know this is not these facts, but what would have happened if Mr. Cross had contacted OPM upon his divorce and said, I'm now divorced, I'm continuing to receive a reduced annuity for survivor benefits, but now there's no one to receive those survivor benefits because I don't have a spouse any longer and I don't want to elect anyone else, would he immediately have been able to have a fuller pension at that point? Is that what happens when you become divorced? So the reason you're getting the lower pension is so that your spouse could continue to receive a pension if you predecease. But if he no longer has a spouse and he wants the full pension for himself, is that something he could choose to do?
I believe he would have to make that election in writing. He would have had to submit that in writing to OPM. I don't believe a call is sufficient. Had he made an election to receive his full benefits, I believe that would go to the question of intent, because here Mr. Cross did elect to receive reduced benefits, and that did go towards showing that he had intent.
I know. It just seems one of the things that I've been trying to wrestle with is it seems weird to me that he is that OPM is arguing on the one hand that there is no beneficiary who is qualified to be an annuitant, and yet he was receiving less than his full pension solely because he had executed an election that would allow for survivor benefits. So do you see the sort of, it seems to me fundamentally unfair that his pension is continuing to be reduced for the reason that he would assume somebody would receive survivor benefits, and now OPM is saying, okay, well, we're not going to give back the difference in pay, and we're also not going to give you the survivor benefits. That kind of seems just a tiny bit unfair. I'm not sure what to do with it, but it seems troubling.
And that issue has come up in other cases where employees did elect to receive those reduced benefits. And in cases where annual notice was found to have been received and to have been sufficient, the court still determined that the survivor was not entitled to those benefits.
And not entitled retroactively to the difference in his own pension that he would have received? Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, if he continued to get less money each month than he was entitled to in exchange for the promise of survivor benefits, once OPM says you're no longer entitled to the survivor benefits, shouldn't they at least have had to go back and retroactively given him the difference in pension between the reduced amount he took and what he should have gotten?
Oh, I see.
Even though he's dead, it would go to his estate or something. I don't know.
Right.
I have a fundamental, you're not prepared to answer, and I'm not going to put the government on the hook for something like that. It just seems so fundamentally unfair that he continued to pay a reduced amount, so OPM didn't have to pay out the full value of his pension to him, and there's no doubt the purpose for that was to secure benefits for someone else, and then OPM says, okay, well, we paid you less, but now we're not giving anyone benefits.
My understanding is that the amount that was reduced would have gone to his ex-wife, Mrs. Cross, but I'm not sure if that's correct. So while he was alive and while they were separated, she would have been receiving some money, but again, I'm not sure.
Okay. That's okay. I'm not. I know it's a weird question. I didn't expect you to know the answer to. Don't worry. Okay, let's have rebuttal time. Ms. Helen?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I do not, under the law, one cannot simply take it as a given that OPM provided notice, the required notice to an annuitant. This would amount to a presumption not provided for under the law.
Let me ask you a question. You heard our colloquy with Ms. Christine Ohl, and it's clear that the only notice here is the December 2012 notice. And that's obviously a strong point in your favor. Assume for the moment, however, and this is obviously a hypothetical, we did have in this case, in addition to the December 2012 notice, we did have testimony that was present in the Du Bois case and the Briggs case from a representative of OPM, that Mr. Benson individual, who testified that every December the notices went out. How, in your view, would that change or not change the result in this case? In other words, if you had the December 12 notice, nothing else in terms of notices, but you also had the Benson testimony.
Well, I think in that situation, Your Honor, there would be a question as to whether that was sufficient for OPM to meet its burden of production, because OPM has produced that evidence. I think there would still, a key thing would be that testimony would have to identify that the 2012 document was notice, and OPM should proffer the notice that was provided during the relevant period. So I do believe that OPM's burden of production, at a minimum, as long as that testimony would require that, would substantiate that evidence was provided actually to Mr. Cross, and that what the notice contained, then that would meet OPM's burden of production. However, that is not the case here. And because OPM did not submit any such evidence, the board's conclusion that it was more likely than not that Mr. Cross received notice is simply not supported by substantial evidence.
What about the board's conclusion that not only did he receive it, but he burned it?
Yes, Your Honor, similarly, that is not supported by substantial evidence. In fact, the opposite might be true, because Mr. Cross had for 3 or 4 years retained that 2012 notice, one would presume he would continue to save other notices.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I go to my older documents first, right? So theoretically, you would do that, wouldn't you? Potentially. I mean, there's at least a question of fact there.
Correct, Your Honor. And because of those reasons, it was improper for the judge to simply presume that Mr. Cross continued to receive notices both before and after 2012. Thank you all very much.
Thank both counsel. This case is taken under submission.